This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 560, brought to you by Geek Fuel. Go to GeekFuel.com/iFanboy to get your free bonus item. And of course, iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 560. This could be the last podcast ever, if the country destroys itself.
I was thinking if you died.
Also a possibility. About. You know, there's not really a bus system in my town, which I think is how most of us expect to go.
I just thought it was going to be because you're dying of your consumption.
I do. I have a light consumption, not like last year's apocalyptic consumption, which threatened to kill at least two-thirds of our little triumvirate. It tried
right,
its damage.
So,
anyway, I'm Josh Flanagan of iFanboy. Over there is my partner, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And we're down our third leg today.
We're too Jamokin' it.
It's a double Jamokin'. Double Jamoke sort of.
Ron Richards is off this week.
Fucking movies. We are.
That is bullshit. Can we air our laundry? Like,
don't
normally somebody misses. Normally somebody misses the show because they're like on vacation or they got a work thing or there's some other commitment. No, Ron just bought fucking movie tickets during our regular recording time.
But it was so he could do the show. Theoretically.
Next time I'm going to be out because I'm taking a nap.
As opposed to me, who was like, I'm not watching that movie. I don't want to see it. I'm not doing that show. So I don't know. Yeah. Like, I showed up for this. He's going to show up for that. More people listen to this. Anyway, we're going to talk. It's a fanboy. That's what we are. We complain about each other, but we mostly love each other. We also love comics, and every week we read a bunch of them. And then sometimes only two of us show up to talk about their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week, and the other books that the two of us will talk about. I think the shows with two people, specifically me and Connor, are very good shows. I've heard a lot of good things about how these shows, they're terrific shows. I mean, they're just fantastic. Let me tell you, the shows with two Jamokes, forget about it.
Save those jokes, because we're going to have a couple of those come up in this episode.
Connor, there's no limit. There's no limit. Here's your spoiler warning. Going to do those jokes some more. They're going to be terrific jokes. This is also a review show, so we could spoil your books if you haven't read them, and that's your problem. Connor, you had the pick of the week.
This week, the pick was The Flintstones number 5, and I think 4 was also the pick.
I believe so.
And this wasn't even the best issue of The Flintstones, but it made me laugh. And I think today, this week, I needed to laugh, and once I laughed out loud for real, I was like, you know what? You're at Flintstones. Also, some very interesting things happened in it, which we'll get to in a second. But this is the series of Mark Russell and Steve Pugh. And if you want to know more about that, you can listen to Josh's interview with Mark Russell on his Talksplode. But this is the book taking the critique
right there,
world
buddy?
By storm. Yeah,
I thought you were going for Cretaceous for a second, but that didn't happen.
I had a little stroke. Yeah, the critics are loving this book, us among them. And here we have two things going on. It's election day in Bedrock for two elections. One for the mayorship. A lot of that going around comics this week, by the way. The mayorship, and also for, I guess, school president at Bedrock Middle School. And we get to, well, what I liked actually best about this issue was the flashbacks. We get a flashback to Barney and Fred in the war that has been heavily referenced up until this point. And we learn a lot of interesting things, including a major twist at the end. You get a lot. This week was all about heavy Donald Trump referencing. Some of it more subtle than others.
It's quite in the zeitgeist, as I understand it.
Yeah. This one handled it better than the other instance of it.
I don't know what the other one was.
It was the Catwoman election special.
Oh,
we're going to
get to it. We'll talk about that later.
So, there's two elections going on. The mayor election, there's the current mayor is running for election against basically this barbarian warrior, Claw the Destroyer, who is the son of a previous warrior, Mordok the Destroyer, who was the one that led them into the battle, into the war they fought against the tree people before. And that is an interesting debate, because the Claw the Destroyer is wearing a giant, tree mask with horns, and he's got spears, and it's an interesting visual element. And in the middle school election, you have Ralph, who wants your vote, or he'll punch you in the beef.
He's going to punch you right in the beef.
That was a joke that they ran into the ground, and then they pulled it back out again.
Is that what made you laugh?
Yes, it was. He kept saying, "I'll punch you in the beef." And at first I'm like, I don't even know what the beef is. Is the beef like your balls? Like, what is the beef? And then, the seminal question, where is the beef? And then at the end, he did punch a kid in the beef, and the kid goes, "Ow, my beef!" And I laughed. And I don't know why. It's a totally dumb joke, but it got me.
Well, if you would have learned in that conversation with Mark Russell, he is not above high-minded satire. Nor low punning. He wanted to do the gag with the Panda Express, and they were serving panda at one point, which is not, this is not highbrow stuff.
Right.
But yeah, he got, my beef.
That panel made me laugh, and it's even in the background.
Yeah, it's not even foreground stuff. It's not the point of that page.
And it got me. What did you think of this issue? Because you've been a big booster of this book since Ron introduced it to both of us.
I liked the issue very much. I don't think it was the best of them.
No,
it was actually a little uneven. Because I wasn't sure the timeline that things were happening. Because part of the one election was, they're colored differently now that I'm looking at it. But sort of the good.
They aren't at the same time?
No.
I assume they were happening at the same time.
No, because the earlier, if you look at the coloring on the flashbacky stuff, it looks like they joined.
I assume there's three storylines. There's
the point.
Two elections are happening at the same time, and then there's the flashback to when Fred and Barney were younger, and they were they were fighting. Wilma's pregnant, and they're going to fight the war.
Anyway, my point is that part was, I guess, a little bit confused. Not so bad. It just wasn't the best of all of the things that I've seen. But there was a lot of funny things going on. I thought one of the things that I think is interesting about this, and that we also saw in the one about where they send the monkey into space, is there's a pretty heavy undercurrent going on here. Whereas all the other stuff, the satire has been goofy and it keeps it, like all the animals are, domesticated in the house and that's kind of sad. Like in this one, they murder a lot of people and he lets that retain its heaviness. So maybe even when I'm saying, I don't know that it was the best, I just I don't know that there's a little tougher to chew on, maybe, so it doesn't make it quite as funny.
No, and that's one of the reasons I liked
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily a negative.
The contrast between the war flashback and the goofy elections. And so the first four issues, we've had a lot of referencing to the war with the tree people, and Fred and Barney were veterans, and they go to the VFW, and they've had some mild, you know, PTSD illusions. So there's been that sort of thing going on. So here we see it. We see that it was a completely fabricated war. It was a fabricated conflict with the tree people. They just wanted the land, and they convinced the people that the tree people were going to invade, so they had to raise an army to invade them first, and then they did. And with these, even they were in these goofy hats, they still, it gets dark because they ended up kill. You know, who brings women and children to an invasion? That's when Fred realizes they were duped, and there wasn't actually any threat from the tree people. And then it ends. One of the things going on in this issue is that in the flashback, Wilma's pregnant, and Betty is jealous, and
sad.
Barney wants to be a dad, and then we find out that Barney is not able to have children. And then in the trees amongst the dead bodies, Barney finds Bam Bam, or what the baby that will become Bam Bam. So Bam Bam isn't his kid. He's a tree person. And that explains why he's so much more strong than everyone else.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a really interesting twist. I mean, again, really fucking with the Flintstones mythos here.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the questions I asked. And if you like this book and you like us talking about it, you really need to go listen to that interview. But I was like, how are you able to do this? And he kind of said, I don't know. They haven't really said anything, so I'm just going to keep doing it.
And then, of course, Claude the Destroyer wins a landslide victory for mayor. So that tells you where Mark Russell's head's at in terms of where he thinks the world's going. But as I said, this isn't the best one, but this was the most enjoyable read for me this week. I thought the election stuff was on point, as opposed to being on the nose, as we'll talk about in a minute. This book continues to sort of astound.
Yeah.
And the Steve Pugh art we don't talk enough about is really,
right.
Really good.
Yeah, even
we talked about him before, but
the Chris Chukri coloring is pretty great. It's a really good book. Like even down to the designs of, you know, we've always seen the little water buffalo hats, but now we see them as soldiers. We see their guns. We see, you know, the turtle shell helmet. Which, why didn't they wear those into battle, by the way?
I don't know. The water buffalo helmet seems like it's useless.
And a target of sorts. Although it's empty in there, so maybe. Anyway, you know, like there's a huge. He gets to draw big dinosaurs doing stuff every once in a while, and. It's pretty good. Right. There's a big brontosaurus with a whole like war contraption strapped to it, you know.
And the gorillas, they're like their hand-to-hand combat trainer. Like it's good. I mean, but like also design-wise, you know, none of these people look like their cartoon counterparts, but also all of them are recognizable.
Yeah, you know who they are. Yeah, you're right. It works for that. If this looked like the traditional Flintstones, it would be terrible. You know, but conversely, if it looked like, you know, the design that they did in the Scooby-Doo Apocalypse book, it would also be terrible. It's a great. I'm not going to take that road.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a great book. I'm running out of reasons to say why or how.
No, it's I like how there's a different theme every week. So you can riff on that as opposed to like an ongoing story.
Yep.
Because it would get harder to talk about this book if it were that case.
Yep.
But, equally so, the very close runner-up to pick of the week was Nightwing number 8, which I'm prepared to say now is the best Batman book being done right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
So there seems to be nothing wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Batman's real good, but I don't really care about the Gotham Girl aspect, which seems to be front
psycho
center.
Psycho pirate thing.
Yeah, I love psycho pirate. I just don't care about Gotham Girl.
Right.
Or Gotham when he was there before he died too. Gotham Boy, whatever his name was. Whereas this seems real. This, and I keep hating to say it like the old man I am, but this one feels the most like an old school DC book. It doesn't feel like this book could have come out in 2002, 1997.
I'll tell you what the best part of this book was.
Yes.
Hands down.
Yes.
You've got Bruce Wayne
hanging in a death trap. I mean, like a classic Batman death trap.
Awesome. Yeah.
And the shots are sort of it's near the end where the timer's counting down and it goes from one or actually up 198 to 199 and then you sort of look down the abyss. And you don't really even get a really good sense of where you are in the space, but it doesn't really matter because it's the sense of falling in space. And he falls, and then you flip the page, and there's a beautiful shot from under of Nightwing like jumping down and grabbing Bruce as he falls. And it really had that's very, very good comic book storytelling in terms of action and just dramatic composition. That two-page bit blew me away. That was perfect.
You really jumped over the important bit, which is explaining the death trap, because we haven't had one of these kind of things in a long time. So Raptor kidnaps Bruce Wayne, puts him in a chair. As Josh said, you know, he's shackled to the chair. He's shackled by his arms, his legs, his neck, and there's a contraption with a stock ticker on it. And when Wayne Tech's stock hits $200...
Oh, I didn't even catch that part.
He's going to be stabbed to death with a sharpened silver spoon. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah. I keep thinking I don't like this book or that I can drop it, and then I keep reading it. So I think I'm not paying as much attention because I'm like, I don't want to like it because I just don't want to read so many books. But so I think that by the end I'd snapped and I'm like, ah, that's really something. I will, just because I said so many wonderful things about what Javier Fernandez did there, Bruce and Dick look exactly the same age on that last page. In fact, they look like the same person.
That is true. But that's the problem just in general. So the big thing that I figured out here, which is not that I'm not that smart, it's just that's what they reveal, is that this seems to be the final issue of this current Raptor storyline. Raptor's been that guy that Dick's been hanging out with. We didn't know if he was good or evil. He was formerly a Talon with the Court of Owls, and he turned on them with Dick and helped them take down one of their cells. Well, here we find out, because we used to think he was sort of the opposite of Nightwing. He was the bad boy version of Dick Grayson, but actually he's not. He's the opposite of Bruce Wayne. He had the same sort of thing happen to him, and instead of going the way Bruce did, he went the other way. So he's not really Nightwing's mirror. He's another Batman mirror, which is totally fine. I like that twist because we've been operating under one assumption, and then we get that subverted for us. That was good, too. I just think that as was happening in the Grayson book, Tim Seeley and back then Tom King was also the writer, they have a really good handle on Dick Grayson and what makes him special as opposed to all the other psychics running around. And I think the relationship between him and Bruce Wayne here is really good. They tie in the family stuff and the circus stuff really well. And Javier Fernandez is just doing really fantastic work. It's super fun and makes me happy because, you know, I love Nightwing.
I think also because, you know, Nightwing has, you know, for a little while it was looking like Nightwing was going to go away. Yep. And he really should have. You could see him going away. But this book really does ground him as a character, like a real character, and why he's unique in this world. You know, really good. They're making a strong case for keeping him around as an interesting character, I guess.
He's one of the last you'd get. I mean, he's way more. I mean, if you're talking about getting rid of redundant sidekicks, and that's just because it's my favorite, but you'd get rid of Jason Todd, you get rid of even Tim Drake before.
Sure. No, yeah, I don't disagree with you, but you know, they're making a case for it.
Yeah, he's fantastic. This is great. This was, even if you haven't following along this storyline, you can pick up this issue because it's sort of a self-contained thing. Even though it's the final part of a two-part story, I guess. Is it the final part? It's only part two. It felt like the final part.
It feels like it, but obviously
it says finale. It says finale at the end. Yeah, so it's the final part of a two-part story. Pick up this one and the one before. These are really good issues. Or you can just pick up this one because it gives you all the information you need. As Josh said, the Javier Fernandez stuff is really, really good in this issue.
Yep.
Yep.
Speaking of really good, I always feel like I need to beat the drum for Spider-Woman, which was a little spoiled for me by the people. Because somebody basically said, Dennis Hopeless, you know, made me
made me cry or broke my heart or something like that. And I was like, that means someone I like dies. And if you've been reading this book, it's pretty obvious who that's going to be.
Spider-Woman.
Nope. No, it's her book, actually. So there's sort of three adult characters in this book. There's Spider-Woman. There's Ben Urich. And if that guy's not dead by now, they're not going to kill him in this book.
I thought he was dead.
I think he was for a bit. And there's Roger, the porcupine, who was... Who was a silly villain, and he had been providing emotional support and childcare for Jessica Drew. And in this, we have the revelation that, you know, Ben's like, all right, who are you fooling? You're in love with her. And he's like, what? I don't. Yes, I am. Because, you know, that's been the thing. And he's, you know, it's the lovable loser who's not really a loser because he's a really good guy who's in love with a girl who's way out of his league. And I was like, oh, he's bear meat. That's not good. And so because he turned, there's a pretty sad end to his story. And it's one of those, you remember the Friday Night Lights episode where, here's another spoiler, deal with it. Saracen's dad is killed. And the end of the episode is just like somebody knocking on the door.
Yes.
And then they answer it and then look real sad. Like you just see a face. They don't really explain it. They basically did that here. And it was really like nice comic book version of that kind of scene.
So was he killed in a mundane way, like Miss Landingham, or was it like
if you're like a bad guy who's friends with lots of supervillains and then you turn to the good guy team, the Hobgoblin is going to be upset.
So it wasn't like a bus hit him.
No, his past came back to haunt him, which is morally apropos. But it's sad because he was a really interesting character that was sort of grown out of the. I don't know if Hope has created him, but either way, he may as well have. You know, it's just to take some little character and build him into something. And he got the last issue was like Roger's hero moment where he beat the Sandman.
Then he's totally toast.
Yeah, no, it was all right there. But it's sad because, you know, you could have let this go on for a while. But they had this series and the one before it, you know, the building up of Roger. So
is there another issue? Is it still going, or is it?
I don't. It doesn't say it was like the end of the series or anything. I mean, at the least, they'd have to deal with the out fallout of that. And you know, it's still Jessica's story, and she's the superhero who has the baby, which you know, very near and dear to the author's heart, is the kind of story he wanted to tell. And I think working people with kids would really dig this if they like superhero stories, as I've said many times before. But you know, really good issue. It's sad, but they earned it. Good book. I like how they drew Hobgoblin in here a lot.
Speaking of the past coming back to haunt, in the finale of The Sheriff of Babylon, number 12, this is the series one finale of The Sheriff of Babylon. Yeah.
Season one.
Season one.
We are not British.
You never know. So this was, again, much like the series itself, morally fucked up, kind of sad and depressing. And at the end, you don't know what really happened or if it's good or not.
Yep.
I mean, you kind of have a sense of that it's not good. But I don't know for sure. I'm not prepared with this book at all to put a stake in any kind of ground on one side or the other. So you love this book.
Explain what happened. Yeah, well, there's a reason I didn't suggest it. I was a little lost, and I feel like maybe because it referred to stuff that had happened in the earlier issues that I have lost track of. And it's funny because the last two or three between this one was pretty clear cut because we knew that the two characters whose names I don't remember, but the two actual Arab characters were meeting with the terrorist. And so that was all pretty straightforward. And you knew that the other guy was sort of talking to CIA people and seeing how awful they were. And then this was about how that all came together. And I wasn't fully clear on that.
Yeah. It seemed, I don't remember this. I vaguely remember this guy, this character, Jim.
That's the guy I did not remember. Yeah.
So, our main character, handsome dude.
Who has a beard now, lunch. Which threw me off.
Yeah, he's having lunch, and he spots Jim from Ops at the restaurant, and he grabs him by gunpoint, and I think So basically, ever since his Iraqi buddy's wife was killed, that's sort of been the underlying stories. Mm-hmm. Who killed her, and let's get revenge on them. And that almost happened when he was at the CIA headquarters and he almost shot the other agent. Mm-hmm. And I guess Jim from Ops claims to be a sad sack computer tech who was used by the younger CIA agents as sort of a actor to play their boss, because everyone there is so young that some of the people don't respect them. So they ask older guys to stand there and look menacing, and they refer to them as the boss. And that's his excuse for not being actually responsible for killing the wife. And we don't know if that's true or not. It seems like it could be, but also he could be lying. Either way, he gets shot in the head. So if he was actually just a sad sack computer tech contractor, then they murdered him. And if he was the really Jim from Ops, then they also murdered him, but for good reason. So who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I was a little... I mean, like, I got the gist. It wasn't right. Like I didn't know what the point was. It was just some of the details. Totally.
Yeah.
And I know that wasn't just me, but also, like, you'd have to, you know, this was a intricately planned, well thought out book, and my mind doesn't think back to 12 months ago in those intricately planned.
Like
things.
A lot of what Tom King does, he does a lot of that sort of intricately plotted stuff. You kind of have to sit, like, this would be a good 12 issue collection. Like, read this all at once.
Well, he was a novelist before he was a professional comic book writer, so. You know, it was
right,
set
but
up
I'm
like
saying
that.
This one particularly, this book.
Yeah.
You definitely should go back and read it all together. But as on the whole, this has been a very satisfying story.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was good. It looks great. Mitch has gotten better through the whole thing.
Yes.
Anyway. Now, you have not been reading Thor. I don't know what the regular book is called.
Mighty Thor?
You have not been reading that, as has been well documented. Yep. Now, this week saw the release of The Unworthy Thor, number one, written by Jason Aaron, with art by Olivier Coipel, about the Odin son.
Right.
Did you read it?
I did.
I should fucking hope so. Because, first of all, Olivier Coipel is a gift.
Yeah.
He's a gift to all of us. And I don't know at what point Jason Aaron, he's a good guy. He makes good comics. But at some point, he became the guy who got the artists that everybody else would want to work with. You know, whether it's Stuart Niven over on Star. Yeah, definitely. He took over the Remender sort of place. So you've got Dowderman over on the Mighty Thor, and you've got Olivier Coipel on the Unworthy Thor. And I thought it was a pretty good start. I like spending time with the Odin son again.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it did remind me of all the things I don't like about Marvel right now. It's sort of encapsulated in the Thor situation.
More specifically, can you?
Well, like
that, it's different
from easy standpoint. Remember the early days of God of Thunder when. We would flash forward to the old man Thor, and he is missing an eye, he's missing an arm. We're like, wow, he had some shit happen to him in the millennia since. And then they decide they were going to just show the arm get cut off, and now he's got a metal arm. And it's like, it was much more interesting when it was just a thing that happened in the intervening hundreds of years. And you don't need to show it. Now it's less interesting.
So, okay, I see what you're saying. And also, in that same vein, they definitely referred to the miniseries Thors, which was a very silly miniseries indeed. In a good way, in that it was.
Yeah, I mean, we really liked it. It was basically Thor as police procedural, but I feel like my interest in the Marvel Universe has gone way down since the Unworthy miniseries, whenever that was, the event when Thor stopped becoming Thor and everything started changing there. Like, this was fun. He writes a great Thor. Thor's one of my favorite characters. He does, you know, Olivier Coipel's awesome. He's got a big battle with a bunch of trolls, but like, it just represents to me what I don't really like about Marvel right now.
But it is just the story of Thor loses the hammer and Thor gets the hammer back. That's what we're watching.
Well, he's getting a different hammer back.
Now.
He's getting,
I mean,
he's
like,
getting
that's
the other hammer.
Everybody gets a hammer.
You get a hammer.
I know. That's where I was. Thank you.
Which one is, Yeah, even Beta Ray Bill's got a hammer. I mean, it's but fine. I'm gonna read more.
I was pretty happy to see Beta Ray Bill show up, by the way.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
With his
fans love Beta Ray Bill.
That and the goats. There was a line about goat power here. I was like, I can't fly unless under goat power, and I was like, that's a good line. I really like the goats. If the story is this is Thor who is super bold and brash, and we've seen that because Jason Aaron's laid it all out, and then we have to see him sort of brought low, and he's unworthy, and we don't know why, you know, and he has to sort of get his groove back. I'm cool with that. That doesn't bother me. And also, this is taking place. If this was all wrapped up in the Civil War, then I think I would agree with you, yeah. But it's not. It's its own story, and it's the story he's telling, and you could not be into it. And I think space sharks are going to show up again, so that's rad.
I really like... There was a really great bit. So, like, there's a classic movie or TV trope where the bad guy's getting away. The hero steps out and pops off a couple of shots from his pistol at the car to no avail, right? That happens all the time. So here you get the Thor version where the trolls are escaping on their space boat. And so Thor throws his axe at them from far away and just misses and just goes into space. That was funny. Just keeps going. He's got to get his goat to go get it because it's... just going to keep space. It's just going to keep going. There's nothing going to stop it.
At least he's got a goat.
I mean, this was good. On its own, it was really fun. And I'm going to read another one. And Beta Ray Bill's awesome and everything. But, you know, there's a little bit nitpicky stuff. I do think Olivia Coipel could decide how to draw the hairy chest of Thor. And now it just looks like a bunch of weird squiggles on his chest.
Fair enough.
That was my only complaint about the art.
Are the French a hirsute people?
Yeah, I'm sure some are.
Yeah. You're saying it's a varied population? I really love how...
I like that he has a hairy chest, because most characters don't.
I think that it's funny that this Thor's body is actually more realistic looking than the guy who actually plays Thor in the movies.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like a real body, as opposed to Chris Hemsworth, who's... I mean, unhuman?
Made in the lab?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
An egg white monstrosity. On that note, this episode's brought to you by Geek Fuel. Geek Fuel ships out a mystery box for geeks and gamers each month that has at least $50 worth of value for around $15 plus shipping and handling. Every box has an exclusive t-shirt, a fully downloadable game, and a total of 5 to 7 geeky items. Go to geekfuel.com/ifanboy to check their awesome boxes. And if you sign up using our link, which is geekfuel.com/ifanboy, I'm going to come back around to that, you're going to get a free bonus item. Especially for iFanboy listeners that nobody else gets, a copy of the Suicide Squad Rebirth #1, that's a Jim Lee book, you may remember, and one lucky listener will get picked at random to receive a black and white cover variant copy, and you can check out pictures on the website. So go to geekfuel.com/iFanboy and get value for your money in that sense.
That's a good value. So yeah. $15 for $50 value.
Exactly.
And one of you jerks is going to get a random variant cover.
And folks out there, they'll pay for the variant covers. Oh, they'll pay.
Right. So that's, you're going to get even, you can flip that for even more value. So that's a good geekfuel.com/ifanboy.
Yes, we thank you.
Thanks a lot. So when's the last time Southern Bastards came out?
It's been a while.
I feel like it was 2015.
No, I don't think that long.
It may not have been, but it just felt like it. And also because we've been waiting for this moment since issue 6
mm-hmm. or something. Yeah, that's true.
So to issue 15, the daughter, see, it's been so long I don't remember the main guy's name anymore.
Earl
the daughter
Tubb,
shows up.
Lady Tubb.
Earl Tubb's daughter, the military veteran who is of mixed race, shows up to the town and she's pissed. She's just, everything makes her angry. She sees her dad's stick hanging up at the barbecue place. She sees Coach Boss. She's not happy. At one point, she starts to zip open a duffel bag full of machine guns when she sees him, but it doesn't end up happening. But shit's going to go down. But also, I'm glad that they didn't go humanizing Coach Boss. Like, we were heading that way, and he's like, fuck it, I'm just going to be evil here.
Well, so I like Coach Boss had a real bad day. or several days. This was really Coach Boss's shit week. after his secret weapon, his blind defensive coach, died. You know, after losing faith in him at the same time. You know, he was trying to be a good guy, sort of. In terms of respecting the game of football, he did not want to cheat, but his team was just getting destroyed over and over again, which is really interesting because the team is the same team that was really good, but they lost their defensive coordinator. So
right, they don't know the schemes, they don't know how to defend against the offenses of the other team. You're right.
This is a tribute to excellent coaching, which I think is interesting. But
Coach Boss has had enough. He turns down the offer to take out the star player in one game. So the next game, they have an even better star player. He's going to take him out. And poor coach. I mean, I don't want to say poor Coach Boss. I just want him to get shot.
His shorts don't even look quite as short as normal. Something's wrong with Coach Boss.
He's all off. He's got pants on.
Yep.
Coach Boss's world's been rocked. There's a bulldog at one point, though.
That is good. I like that.
Catwoman Election Night Special number one. Did you read the first part of this? Because this is a two-part.
So I did not read the Catwoman story at all.
Okay. So for those who don't know, this is a double-sized issue. The first story is a Catwoman story, which deals with the election of the mayor of Gotham City. And then the second part is the finale to Prez, also written by Mark Russell, who wrote Flintstones. And I'm assuming for most people, or for a lot of people, the big draw was Prez. A lot of people listening to the show, the big draw was Prez, because we were big fans of it. People who listen to the show were ready. I didn't think it was that good, the finale of Prez.
I agree with you. At least it felt shoehorned, and it was a nice story, but it didn't feel like a finale. How's that? Like, it felt like a short, like, hey, look at this thing we're doing. But I mean, what was it even doing here?
I don't know. Although I can tell you, there actually was a reason. So we know from reading Prez that Prez takes place in the DC universe of the future, and there's even a Wayne descendant in the story. The problem is, so the main story, the Penguin's running for mayor, and he's just basically reading Donald Trump. Like, someone took Donald Trump's speeches and just put him into the
the Penguin.
Yeah, it's like word for word. He's going to build a wall around Gotham, and like it's going to be a great wall, and it's going to be, you know, the best wall. And I rolled my eyes through my head while reading it. But then there's the main story is Catwoman's remembering growing up in an orphanage, and she's protecting the woman who ran it because she was actually nice. And the thing was, one of her fellow orphans was a psychopath murderer, and it so happens she's running for mayor against the Penguin. So no good choices there. And but it ends with the woman watching the election coverage with a young girl, and the young girl says, "I'm going to be the president one day." And she says, "I'm sure you will, Beth. I'm sure you will." And we get a close up, and it's Prez.
Oh,
except Prez is like 9 here,
and she's like 14 or 15 in the.
It will even say 16, 18.
Yeah,
even that's still only 10 years difference.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So that was, I guess, why they shoehorned Prez into this, because she shows up at the end of Catwoman as a too old kid. It was a mess. This whole thing was a mess. I loved Prez, but I didn't think this was a good finale.
Yeah. Yeah, there was bits of it I liked, but it wasn't as perfect, I guess, as the book was.
It just wasn't needed. The book ended... Unfortunately, it ended the way it did, but it ended, and
yeah.
I hadn't really thought about it since then, and, you know, it just, I thought it wasn't that sharp. He's doing much sharper work in Flintstones.
Yeah.
Just unfortunate.
Fair enough. I think I'm going to go with you on that. So, Superman number 10, I don't know what I thought about this. At first, I didn't like it. I thought, this is hokey. Why are they all fighting? And then I remembered that's what always happens. And then when everybody started getting along, I liked it more. But this was basically Damian getting all shirty with John, little Robin, and little Superboy, and then they're
the dads, Bruce and Clark, fight, but then everybody makes up for it, and then I don't know. Like I'm stuck between it was stupid and it was cute.
The best part of this issue was that Jonathan punched Damien in the beef, but
I can see that that is now going to make it into your lexicon.
But I thought
you're going to be at the gym and you're going to hurt yourself, and you're very, very quietly.
Oh, my beef!
What's wrong? It's my beef. What the fuck?
Like Monday's a leg day, Tuesday's an arm day, and then Wednesday's a beef day. I didn't like this issue at all.
No? Which was I thought
really
you might
sad
not.
because I really liked the last four. I was mm-hmm. looking back at the covers, like, oh, I've you know, the last two were that Darwin Cook tribute, and the one before that was the one on the farm, and then there was the one in the fair. Like, I liked all these.
Yeah,
I thought this was pretty bad. I think the kids, at least especially in the opening scene, are written too maturely.
Mm-hmm.
Like his when Jonathan's at school with his little buddy, his girlfriend, she's like, "I supply you with refreshment." It's like mm-hmm. that's not anything a 9-year-old's ever going to say, or however old these kids are.
How old are they supposed to be? I feel like 12.
It's hard to say because Damien's 13 now, so I assume that Jonathan is around that age because they look about the same size. I don't like the interactions with these characters. And one of the things I've been thinking about with Damien is that it just doesn't serve anyone to have a dick as Robin. That's the wrong way to say that because there was a dick as Robin. An asshole.
Yeah.
You know, we had one of those and we voted to kill him. It just doesn't work in the long term.
Yeah,
it was interesting in the beginning when he was super young and he was written as sort of a aristocrat who was hiding his insecurity with supreme arrogance, right? He was in way over his head, so he acted better than everybody because he knew he wasn't. And that we've lost that because that was the element that Grant Morrison brought to it. Now he's just written as an asshole.
And it's weird because I feel like they kind of told his story in such a way that like we had seen him grow past it, so then he would start to act better, you know, with flashes of it or whatever, but it doesn't seem to be here. Because it's so easy to write him as just that original caricature.
It's just not fun to be around, and it's not what you expect. Like, I can't really imagine Batman putting up with this. I mean, even though he is his son, like, he doesn't put up with this from people who aren't his son.
Well, you don't have
and
kids.
I get parents have blind spots for their kids, but this is, like, over the top.
No, you can't control them. You just try to hang on,
he's just
man.
Not fun to be around. And we got rid of the last one who wasn't fun to be around on purpose. So
I thought, Patrick, that was a long time ago, buddy. It was a long time ago. It's 30 years ago.
I was there.
Yeah.
No,
28 years ago. 88?
Eight.
Yeah.
I was there.
I liked the Patrick Gleason art. Didn't love the colors.
He's great.
There you go.
I mean, it's unfortunate, but I just didn't like this issue.
Let us move along to books that we did not pick, but that others did. If you are a supporter or a patron of iFanboy and you go to ifanboy.com/support. I got it. I switched. Or patreon.com/ifanboy. It works either way. You will get a chance and you become one of those patrons. You get a chance to vote on a book each week that you, the listeners, the supporters, would like us to talk about. And this week, the book was Motor Girl number one. Written and drawn by iFanboy favorite Terry Moore. And again, I just like to point out, this is exactly the kind of thing we would have talked about anyway.
Oh, this book would have definitely been in the show. But that's good. I mean, yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
We're all in accord is what I'm seeing.
It's interesting because as I was reading this, I was really thinking about how the show has evolved over the years. So when we started way back in 05, way back in 05, Terry Moore was a name that was always on the show. Always. Yes. Between the end run of Strangers in Paradise, and then when we moved into Echo and other books, we didn't really talk about Rachel Rising at all, but especially for Strangers in Paradise, that book was talked about every time it came out. And
a lot of pick of the weeks.
You know, a lot of picks of the week. And
a lot of video show action.
You interviewed him a lot. Yeah, just he was a name that was constantly around us, and then he you know, we just sort of dropped off his work, and And now he's back with a new book, Motor Girl. He studies self-publishing, as always, and he's doing all of it. One guy does all the work. And I don't think that we've had a true indie book like this on in a while.
Yeah.
Have we?
No.
What did you think of Motor Girl? Wait, before you tell me, just so people who haven't been listening since 05, so you and Ron are huge fans of Strangers in Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. I haven't read it all, though. But I've enjoyed what I've read of it.
I finished it, but I have not revisited it.
Echo, I read about a half of, and then I fell off of.
About
but
the
I bought
same.
The I bought the complete collection at Comic-Con 1 year. I just haven't actually read it. Rachel Rising, I read the first issue. I liked it and okay, but it was horror. Horror's not really my thing, but I ended up buying the first couple of trades, and I fell off that too. Motor Girl.
I fell off Echo. I liked it well enough, but I wasn't completely drawn to it. And Rachel Rising, just, I don't know, the concept didn't really do very much for me.
It was horror.
Yeah. Motor Girl. I don't know what to think about it.
Me either.
My
I'm split.
My initial instinct was, first of all, I thought, was his work always this loose? And then I was kind of like, yeah, I don't think that that's wrong. But it does seem a little looser than normal or different.
You mean the art?
Maybe he's drawing digitally now and he didn't before.
I don't know. It's hard to say. You never want to prescribe a reason. Like, you know, he's older. It could be digital. Like, it did. I mean, it still has that Terry Moore-ness.
Yeah,
to it.
It does. This isn't even a criticism. I was just trying to figure out what was different to me.
He's still one of the best in the business at drawing facial expressions mm-hmm. and emotions on characters.
And cute girls.
And cute girls.
He draws a good cute girl.
I didn't love the first half so much. I liked the second half more.
I liked it from the moment that the old lady showed up.
Yes. So in the beginning, it opens up and there's a young girl and she's working. She's a mechanic and she's working in a garage and she has an ape or a
gorilla
simian buddy. And I was like, huh? I don't know if I needed one of these stories in my life.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not really you're not really giving any other context. They're in this
junkyard,
this garage, the junkyard the whole time. And then when her boss, the old woman, shows up, we find out that the gorilla is actually a hallucination coping mechanism that she got in when she was overseas in the war and held captive for a year. And all of a sudden, then it got really interesting.
Yeah, that is much more interesting. And then a spaceship crashes, and they fix.
And then it got less interesting.
And they fix the oil leak. And I don't.
That's the thing. Like, taking on its own, that scene was actually funny and cute.
Yeah,
and
it was.
But then I was like, oh, I don't really want a world of UFOs. But then I was like, well, maybe this wasn't real. And she even says, did this happen? And the girl's like, oh. So
I mean, which brings me back to my original. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I like this. I like Terry Moore's artwork. I like to look at it very much. I like his sensibility. But I don't know. I can't tell what it is yet, so I will read the next one.
Yeah.
It's kind of
weird. It looks fantastic. Yeah. I mean, even though it's slightly looser, it's still great looking. Impressive in this day and age for the old guys to still be doing work. And I don't mean derogatorily, but like this guy was one of the masters of indie comics in the 90s and early 2000s.
Written, drawn, along and with lettered.
Like, along with like Jeff Smiths and Cerebus.
Dave
Sim.
But and Dave Sim had somebody help him on background.
Right, but I mean those guys aren't really even doing new stuff as far as I know.
It's a different economy. I mean, I think at one point I thought Terry said he wasn't going to do any more issues like this. So I was really surprised there was a new series. Because I thought he said something along, and maybe he just said this to me at a show, but like something along the lines of, you know, like the market isn't there to support a series like this in the way that, like when he was doing Strangers in Paradise, selling, we'll say 10,000 issues, copies an issue, he was doing great. Like everything was cool. And then the trades would sell and then whatever. And I think that it was harder to keep that apace. So I was surprised.
Oh, totally. But we'll see. We'll see where this goes. I mean, obviously the gorilla is not real.
Yeah.
We'll see about the UFOs. I'm not necessarily even against the UFOs, and if unless it becomes about the UFOs, then I'm less interested in it. But
I don't know what he's going to do.
I mean, I like sci-fi, but I don't need that in this story.
It was like a weird cartoon, though. Like, it was almost
right,
more comic strip
like
stuff.
Warner Brothers. They were like Warner Brothers style aliens.
Which is kind of interesting. I guess we'll see.
Yes. I was saying also the sketch work. So, like, the book opens with a sketch, and then it ends with characters, you know, the original sketch that inspired the story, and another, and that they're gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. He said he was going to do this after Strangers in Paradise originally, and it got pushed off. Then he was going to do it after Echo, and it got pushed off, and he's doing it now.
Good.
Ratings?
You still... Oh, right, ratings.
Ratings.
4.
Wow, I was only going to go with 3.
Well, I love the art.
It's true.
And I think it's really... If this is all about her, you know, her trauma, mm-hmm. then it could be very interesting. So I'm going to get 4 for potential.
Okay. And are you going to read the next one?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you all the patrons who voted. You can do that every Wednesday over at patreon.com/ifanboy. And another way we like to thank the patrons is every week we take 4 names from our patron list and we give them what is quite frankly the dumb superpower. So let's start off. Josh, you start off.
Well, Brian Horton, his power is he can't use touchscreen phones or screens or anything. He's completely electromagnetically non-responsive.
So he can't. Oh, so it's not like he can't see them like Daredevil. He just can't. When he touches them, nothing happens.
Nothing happens. Any kind of print, anything. Now there's uses for this, but he does not. He does not conduct.
Interesting. So okay. So it's like when you're wearing winter gloves and you can't use your phone.
Yeah, it's like that all the time.
Although then now they have those phones with those little things on the tip of your finger. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Capacitance.
When I was a kid, we went to one of those science museums and. They had like a plate you put your hand on and it showed your EKG reading. Mm-hmm. And I put mine on and there was nothing there.
Wow. You're a dead man.
Yeah. I may be dead. I may have been dead for the last 20
there
years.
There was a story on, I want to say it was This American Life, about a guy who didn't sweat. He had no sweat glands and so therefore he
Why'd you blow that one?
He couldn't be electrocuted. This is related to that.
That could have very easily been your next power. Yeah, you just blew one.
It's okay. That was a real thing. But it's related to that.
So it can't be electrocuted.
Yeah, because he has no, he can't sweat, so the outside of his body has no moisture on it. So like he would touch the electric fence.
Wow, interesting.
And not get shocked. It's also a big problem to not sweat, though.
I imagine you can't cool down.
Yeah.
You can't, and you can't like remove stuff from your body or your eye or whatever.
I got a dog just like that.
All right, Arturo Murillo. Thank you, Arturo. Arturo's power is that. No matter what book or TV show or movie he's watching, if it's a murder mystery, he knows immediately who the killer is.
I have that.
And it's not just because like it's the most recognizable guest star. Right. He just knows right away.
Does he say it?
He could if he knows in his head.
So that's really the responsibility part of the power is to not ruin everything for everybody all the time.
Right. So like when you're hanging out in the X-Mansion or watching Law & Order. He's like, it's that dude who's always on the show.
Does he say it like, okay, is it as soon as the show starts or is it like if he's watching the credits?
No, as soon as they're on the screen.
Okay.
He's just like, that's the killer.
And it only applies to like video produced or film produced things?
No, it could be a book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Any murder mystery story, immediately knows who the killer
is. Is it that it's fiction. Is it that he couldn't be then brought in by the cops to assist?
No.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It's tough. It's not like Columbo where we all know who the killer is. It's just like, you know, your other shows. You're in NYPD Blues. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's on now.
So, do you know how they say you can do anything with duct tape?
Uh-oh. Yes.
Well, Adrian Zaslona literally can do anything with duct tape. He can fix anything. He can build, provided he has enough tape. He can make any kind of construct. He can make a building out of duct tape. Much like Karnak of the Inhumans can see the flaws in things, he sees a way in which to engineer different things with duct tape. It's not necessarily instant. It's not, you know, form of a buggy, and then you make the duct tape into a buggy. He's got to do it, but he can. The problem is never, is this possible or not? It's always possible with the duct tape.
Can he cook with it?
No. These are non-organic objects.
Just build things.
He's making things. He's engineering.
Interesting.
He's a duct tape engineer.
You can make like a Ford F-150 out of duct tape?
Yeah.
And would it hold the same amount of weight?
Yeah.
Could it tow the same amount of
fully functional
strength?
If not better.
He's got a side business, I think.
He's got.
Although,
well,
he's going to lose a lot in overhead in the duct tape cost.
First of all, duct tape's not cheap.
Yeah, exactly.
And in bulk, you know, it's not. But we had a saying growing up in Maine. If you can't duck it, fuck it, it's broke. And Adrian knows this all too well. But he can, duck it.
Simon Martin's power. Oh my God, I just had it in my head. It went away. Simon Martin's power. Holy shit. I had one.
I've had this happen to me. It's pretty awful.
I had it in my head while you were talking, and then I started engaging you in conversation, and it went away. Shit.
I can give you a suggestion.
Fuck.
I can fill in.
It almost came back.
Okay.
You do it, because I...
Simon.
Shit.
Simon is able to help anyone who loses something on the tip of their tongue. If you've ever been talking and the person is about to say something and then they get hitched because they can't quite remember it, Simon will know what it is every time. It's an amazing ability. You want this guy on your team.
Well, I need him on the pod. I just...
Yeah.
Well, that's a good... That's a really good one. So Simon is probably better off.
So, I think that makes up for that bullshit one I gave Brian.
So thank you, Brian, Arturo, Adrian, Simon. Those are your superpowers. You can get your own superpower by going to patreon.com/ifanboy. And joining today... also, you can go to ifanboy.com/support. That's where you'll find an Amazon link. And as the holiday time comes, it's a very important place to go. Please, if you're doing your holiday shopping through Amazon, consider doing it through our link on ifanboy.com/support. Even better, copy and paste that link, drop it in your browser shortcuts, never think about it again. And we appreciate everyone. Every year, we see a lot of people, activity goes way up on those links when they're doing their holiday shopping. And we're very appreciative of all of that. So thank you very much.
That being
and
said,
I think we have time.
Don't go stand in line on the Black Friday. Order the TV through that.
That's true.
I'm not above just directly saying, you don't want to be in that line. Those people are violent.
So we have time for one quick email. Nick from Seoul, South Korea says, where do X-Wing and Y-Wing pilots go to the bathroom? Also, does the Millennium Falcon have its own washroom? What about the Blackbird, the Quinjet, or the Fantastic Car? I've been sick lately and very bathroom conscious. How can you make all day long trips in these vehicles? So I assume the X-Wing and Y-Wing pilots have some sort of attachment in their suits they pee into.
I would think so. That's sort of what they do with the flight suit. But I was recently at the Museum of the Air Force in Dayton, Ohio. Yes. Which is an amazing place that has many, many planes. And I was standing by an F-4 fighter plane, which an uncle of mine flew in Vietnam. And a man walked up and he said, imagine sitting there for 15 hours. And I don't believe they did have a device at that time.
Sure.
They just sucked it up, Mary.
And you were like, sir, I don't like strangers talking to me.
Well, then my cousin who was with me said, my dad flew one of these, and then they talked, and I was like, oh, God, thank God. When you're a military fighter pilot and you talk to me, I will pay my most attention.
So a Blackbird and Quinjet Fantastic Car, those are like short trip vehicles. Fantastic Car is basically just a flying car.
To be fair,
it won't have a bathroom.
The X-Wing,
any more than your car will have a bathroom.
The X-Wing and the Y-Wing are short hop fighters, too. They do light speed, but I don't think they're meant to be like extended.
Right, that's part of a convoy or something, and they get lost.
Yeah, they're like fighters. They get supported. They don't have their own support. So Luke was not using that to the intended spec, by the way.
But, and I read this email when it came in, and I thought, okay, is the Millennium Falcon basically like an RV? Like, is that their home? They live in the
freighter. It's going to be like any ship that does. It has a head. It has probably has.
No, I get that. What I'm saying is, does Han go home somewhere, or does he live on the Falcon?
He lives on the Falcon.
So therefore, it's basically a giant RV.
I would compare it more to a ship.
Right, but even ship captains dock and go home. They're not always on the ship.
Some. He's itinerant. He's a loner, a rebel.
Dottie. So Nick, the Falcon has a kitchen, a bathroom. I mean, that's where they live. Yeah. And that bathroom shower after Chewie uses it. You got to dig all the hair out of the drain.
You got to get a really special catch for that.
Yeah. So they live on that thing. Other ones are short. Those are short vehicles, short trip vehicles.
Well, the Blackbird's just an SR-71, which technically only has the two seats up front. Although that's not how it was done in the comic. Yeah, but I don't think that does the Quinjet.
It's just a plane.
I bet the Quinjet has a solution.
I bet the Quinjet has a bathroom, just like a plane has a bathroom.
Uh-huh.
Now the X-wing, Y-wing, if they're like going to send it on like a convoy mission, mm-hmm. I bet there's like a different kind of suit you wear.
I bet that is what I was going to say. Yep.
Yeah. Like when Luke's going to Dagobah. But even then, that was a short trip. But I think if there's like a long haul trip you're making in an X-Wing, why would you got a little tube?
Yeah, but again, I don't think you're pooping in either of those.
No, you're just not eating solids.
Yeah, you want to avoid that.
Or you use the Force. Hold it in.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. Nick from South Korea had a question about going to the bathroom in a fictional vehicle, and hopefully we covered all of it.
Do you think there are like rest areas along like galactic routes?
Like you pull off
the interstate? I pulled off at one of those.
In the EU, I'm pretty sure there were those you would gas your ship.
Like where they stopped in Spaceballs?
Yes. That was great.
Can I tell you my greatest moment last week? I was driving along and I like went into some bathroom off the New York Thruway and I came out and there was a soda machine there and I was like, I want something to drink. And I didn't have any cash with me because I left it in the car. And then I used my phone to pay for it at the machine. And I thought, we are living in the future and everything is wonderful.
That's all. If you have an email us at contact@fanboy.com or call our voicemail line. No, shit. Send us a voicemail through your computer. Record a voicemail and send it to us. Tell us who you are, where you're from, how long you've been thinking about the question. Good stuff. Thanks for writing in, Nick. Let's plug stuff.
So I had mentioned, I kind of already did, but I mentioned the Talks Below that we did with Mark Russell, which is really interesting because he is a guy who almost came from nowhere in terms of working in professional comics, and he's just gotten two pick of the weeks in a row plus a prez or two back in the day. Really fun, interesting conversation with a fun, interesting guy. You should go listen to that.
This weekend, Doctor Strange came out, and there is a podcast on it. Somewhere on the feed, either right behind the show or right on the other side, but I don't know yet at the time of recording. But it most likely will be out before the show comes out. Who knows, though? But it'll be there for your listening enjoyment. And then sometime this month, I was talking to Paul and Ryan, and it sounds like we're going to be doing the Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders podcast. It'll probably be out the week before Thanksgiving here in America, so around the 15th, 16th, or 17th, probably 2 weeks. So you can look forward to that on your feed. All those shows you can find them over at fanboy.com. You can go there to find our old podcast. You can comment on this show, talk about this week's books. And you can also follow the action at facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick is before the show comes out. And also, individually, we are Jay Flanagan, C.S. Gilpatrick, and Ron XO.
And if you like this show, you could write a review for it in iTunes or rate it.
Ratings.
Better yet, tell anybody you want to about it. If you liked an episode or somebody's asking or you have some way or some reason to mention it among the social media and get the links out there, then we always appreciate it when people do, which we see quite a lot. And thank you to everybody who does that or just, mention in the comic book shop. This has really made my comic book reading a better experience and I recommend it for others. That is all for now.
I hope Ron enjoyed his movie-going experience.
I enjoyed talking to you, sir. I have no problem with that.
Until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
We're not at the movies. We're here for you.
Yep. We care.
Bye.
You know what? I hope he doesn't like it. Actually, I'm not that many.